It's a Friday, and as we always do, a visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and we talk it over with Ben, thanks to the good folks at Henderson and Watercutty, and see what they offer at STLCriminalDefense.com. STLCriminalDefense.com, Henderson and Watercutty. Well, Ben, it was this time last week that baseball was back on the field. Baseball still back on the field, albeit with some bumps in the road because of testing and the health and safety protocols. But those bumps in the road, and they were big, but the players are still sticking with it. And that's the number one thing. And a lot of players could have said, you know what, I'm done. Hey, the test didn't arrive. Literally, didn't arrive. Testers, they didn't arrive. Literally, they weren't there. But yet, hey, they're sticking with it. And if they get through this week and get through this weekend and get through next week, we get to opening day, we're going to have baseball. I really believe that. Good morning to you, and let's see it. Let's see if we can get through baseball and get through this opening day, get through the next couple of weeks, and hopefully it gets done. What do you think?
I think you're right. I'm thinking along with you. Good morning to you as well. And we knew, Dan, going in that there were going to be some hurdles that had to be cleared here and probably some rough patches, and we've seen them. You know, again, it was very predictable that there were going to be positive tests as players started to arrive at camps. And it was predictable that when those positive tests started to happen, there was going to be a cry to shut it down. You could make a case that those positive tests popping up as players were arriving was actually a sign that the testing system was working because they weren't getting, you know, all together before they had cleared their tests. So that's something that, you know, that's just a matter of we saw that coming, and we knew that those debates were going to happen. I'm more interested in the things that I think baseball has to learn from and adapt in order to keep the chance of the season happening. It's unfortunate that they didn't plan a better system for the 4th of July. You know, the easiest thing in the world is to Monday morning quarterback this stuff, right? No one's ever done anything like this, so there's going to be mistakes, but you can't make the same mistake twice. You can't have a holiday completely jam up your testing returns when you have many tests that you need back within a short window. You can't have players taking tests every other day if they're not getting the results back in between. So they got to learn from that. They got to learn from the travel process that they put foreign players through. The Washington Post had a story this week about how they brought all the players back from the Dominican on an MLB charter, and they didn't test them before they got on the plane. That's probably not wise, because you just put a bunch of players from a bunch of different teams on the same plane, and now some of those guys are not able to hit the field yet because of positive tests. Now, it's not as easy as it may seem. You know, the testing is limited in the Dominican. There are restrictions on what kind of tests you can send to other countries and things of that nature, but it just seems like there could have been a better process in place when they knew they were going to have to get these guys back. So again, travel is going to be a big deal. They got to have that figured out, and they've got to clean some of this stuff up. And I think that's been the response from players. I've been encouraged by that. I think you're seeing guys like Mike Trout, Sean Doolittle, and others, Andrew Miller, speak out, not because they want to derail things, but because they want things to improve. These guys want to play. Some of them have decided to opt out. But you know, I think that's completely their right, and they have their reasons for doing that. But a lot of these guys are saying, look, we want to play. Yeah, we have some reservations, and we got some questions that are going to need to be answered, and things are going to have to go smoother than they did at times during this first launch. But the fact that it hasn't led to a bunch of players pulling the plug on their participation, I think, is a good sign. We should know more within these next couple weeks on how this is going to work once players get onboarded, now how they keep them protected, keep the virus out. That's going to be what these next couple weeks are about. But I tell you what, going down to the ballpark for Thursday night's first inter-squad game, it was pretty cool to see the same team on the field, but in two different uniform colors, looking like it was some semblance of a game. That was a sight for sore eyes.
Absolutely. And let's talk about what's going on the field. Paul DeJong drove in four. I still have mentioned from what I saw in spring training in March, he's going to have a monster year. And I think the big question right now, as you look at the Cardinals and you're trying to construct this roster, if you're Mike Schilt and John Mozeliak and Michael Gersh, is Carlos Martinez. Always a story because of his talent, elite talent. He could be a starter. He could be a closer. And roster construction is tough for every team because of the virus. You don't know who could be in, who could be out, who could be having to be quarantined, so you got to be flexible. Where do you think Carlos fits in as we are about 2.5 weeks away from opening day?
Well, I think in a perfect world, in a perfect situation, Carlos Martinez gets a shot to prove that he's that two-time All-Star starter that he has been. Carlos has worked hard for the opportunity to prove that he can be that guy. He answered the questions this offseason. He answered the questions this spring and looked to be, you know, ready for that spot. And by all appearances, we're going to see him pitch in an inter-squad game on Saturday. But based off the information available from his first bullpens back here in St. Louis, he's still on the right track. You know, he said he pitched something like 97 pitches his last time out in the DR, and I think that translates to American innings. I mean, I don't know why that would be drastically different. He seems like he's built up. He seems like he's very eager to prove he can be that guy. Here's my question, though. You can't ignore what's changed around the situation since spring training was canceled. If I had my opinion, I think the Cardinals should be, you know, show some flexibility here and roll with a 6-man rotation. It doesn't sound like they're interested in doing that, and that they want the traditional 5. To me, the 6-man would allow you to start both Carlos and KK and really spread things out a little bit in case someone goes down. Then you have 5 guys locked in and performing. Nothing has to really change except the schedule. And I think it would allow you some flexibility, like starting Adam Wainwright at home specifically, and really kind of spreading out some of that depth to help weaponize it. But the Cardinals prefer 5. One of the reasons they want 5 is because they feel good about this group of starters' endurance and their ability to pitch deeper into games. And maybe they thought entering camp, maybe deeper than some other teams will have their starters go. So that would be the reason to maybe trend toward 5, which puts the Cardinals back in that spot where they're looking at Kim versus Carlos for the 5th spot. People can make the debate that Adam Wainwright should be the one on the chopping block or someone else, but that's not what it is. So I think we have to focus on what the Cardinals are actually talking about here. I can't help but look at the bullpen and the hurdles and that have popped up there and rethink this a little bit. When we were at spring training, we talked about this carousel of closer candidates, right? And it was going to be a short amount of time before Jordan Hicks was available. And the guys that could have a chance to hold down those high leverage spots included everybody from John Brebbia to Giovanni Gallegos to Genesis Cabrera, and the list went on and on and on. Well, now Alex Reyes has not appeared in a workout. Genesis Cabrera has not appeared in a workout. Giovanni Gallegos has not appeared in a workout. John Brebbia is out for the season with Tommy John surgery. Now there's a 60-game season as opposed to a 162. I think if you ask me, in a normal season, would I rather have a starter's amount of starts from Carlos Martinez and that amount of innings versus him being a closer? I would say no-brainer, start him. But when you're looking at 60 games with your ideal closer, Hicks, not being cleared anytime in July, and unproven closers as other candidates, guys like, you know, I guess you could say that Junior Fernandez could be in that mix. Ryan Helsley, both power arms, but none of them have any real experience in that situation. Andrew Miller could be another type, but he's coming off the worst season he's had as a reliever. And I don't know that you want him in that spot. So to me, if I look at Carlos in a 60-game season as a starter, where he's going to get maybe 60 innings, or I look at him as a closer, where a dominant closer this season could get something like 20 saves, and I think you can make a pretty compelling case that if Carlos is willing to do it, that you could ask him and maybe make a case to him that he's best used and most valuable as a closer. Of course, if he's not bought into that, and I can understand why you would have trepidations because he's worked really hard to prove he's a starter. But if he's bought in that role, considering the hurdles that have popped up around the situation, we don't know when Reyes and some of these other guys will be back. If they will be, hopefully soon. And if that happens, then that conversation changes. I think this is the big reason the Cardinals has not committed to who their 5 are yet. They're kind of in limbo a little bit, but the longer they're in limbo, the more sense Carlos makes at the back end.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com.
a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.
I've said, too, then, and help me out here, because I'm kind of playing along here, trying to figure it all out, too. So then would Kim be out of the rotation if Martinez is in? Would that be the guy that's out, in your opinion?
I think that's what it's going to come down to, yeah.
Okay.
I think it's going to be Carlos versus Kim.
Okay,
and,
so.
And the reason I like KK as the starter is because no one has seen any of this stuff before.
Exactly.
And I think
I
think you want to get him from the jump. He's so unique. His pitches are so, they're so unfamiliar to these hitters. We saw that in spring training. I think there's a real advantage to having him start games.
Yeah, I went back to like Suwon Oh, and I went back to looking at his numbers when he was closing games out, and specifically, I think it was like a 3-month stretch, Ben, and he was like almost unhittable. And part of that was he had good stuff. Believe me, good stuff is going to play, as you know. But I think part of it was in this day and age, you can look at all the video, but still, when you play so many games inside the division and you're playing 18 times and you see a guy so much, you just kind of pick up little things. And I noticed it in spring training, and you were down there too. Kim was making guys look foolish, and part of it was, and at least in my opinion, they had not seen him. And that plays. So I like that. I also like the fact that if you're playing Cincinnati and if you can line him up a couple of times against the Reds with the left-handed bats that they have, I think that's important, that if you can have a lefty against those left-handed bats, that's important too. I don't know. I think it's fun to try to figure out some of the matchups that you could have with that, and maybe that plays into this equation too. There's a lot of different things that play into equations with baseball, but maybe that's one of them you think about. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but that's something I think about.
No, you're not crazy. And let's add this, right? Kim has been a starting pitcher his career. He's been, that's what he's used to. And there is some sense of, like, you don't really know what the bullpen's going to look like for him. Now you can hope that he pitches well out of the bullpen. He's never been in a closer situation. And this would be his introduction to the majors, not knowing what his schedule is, not knowing when he's going to pitch or for how long. And that's a drastic change for a guy who's never done it. Carlos is, and this is in some ways, I got to understand, frustrating for him. He's been so good at the role he doesn't want to have. It's hard to not kind of steer him back toward it.
Right.
You know, we know Carlos could be an all-star starter. He has in the past. We don't really know if he can do it again, but we know he's worked his tail off to get that chance. We also know, Dan, he's one of four pitchers in baseball who's received more than 30 save opportunities over the past two seasons and converted 90% or better of them. For people who have, envisioned Carlos as closer as, oh my God, grab the Tums, clutch your heart, he makes it interesting sometimes. But no one who's watched or looked at the numbers can debate that he gets it done.
Gets it done, that's right.
Plus percent of the time. And that's really the only job in baseball. And I don't care how you do it. And I don't care if you make everybody, have slight heart tremors along the way. You get it done or you don't. That is a pass-fail job. And you can look at all the numbers and all the stats and all the reasons he shouldn't be that good, or a guy should be better there, whatever. I'm into stats. I'm pro analytics, but there's not a metric that tells you how a guy's going to handle that pressure. And that pressure this season will be bigger than it has been, because every game is worth something like 2.7 games. So yeah, you can say, okay, Carlos, you'd rather have him as a starter, put him in the rotation. But if you're assuming then that Kim or whoever you pull out of the rotation or someone else is going to be as good of a closer as Carlos, I'm not sure you can make that leap. And that's the conversation there. How do you determine the value of a save in a 60-game season? And that, to me, is the question. The other thing you have to think about is the Cardinals have guys who can make starts. They might not have a guy who's as good of a starter as Carlos Martinez if he's healthy and his shoulder feels good and he's rocking. They might not. Including Jack Flaherty. I mean, if Carlos is locked in and at his best, he might be the best starter on this team. right now, who do you want saving games for? Who do you want closing for this team? Who's it going to be? Brian Helsley, great arm, not experienced there. Junior Fernandez kind of slipped in that discussion this spring and has had a little control issue. You want Andrew Miller there? I mean, there's really not a guy that jumps out as, yeah, he's the one. And you'd hope it could have been Hicks, but he's not going to be ready to roll. There's no guarantee either that he's going to be cleared for high leverage, you know, and ready for that role as soon as he's back from Tommy John either. So it's a more fascinating discussion than it would be if it was 162 game season for sure. I don't think the Cardinals want to say anything on it because I think they're waiting to see how it plays out a little bit. You have to in this day and age. I mean, the season could be gone tomorrow, so there's really no sense in naming your rotation right now. But I think these are the questions that they're working through too.
I love the Fridays and jumping around with Ben Fred. So let's go to college football. We saw the Ivy League cancel their football season, and college football now is starting to take a different approach because camps are right around the corner in terms of what the Big Ten may do and Big 12 and ACC and Pac-10, Pac-12. So, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. I just want a general thought on what you think these conferences are going to do, and it's going to start happening, and it's going to start happening at a rapid pace. What do you think is going to happen with college football in the fall?
I'm not optimistic that it's going to happen, period, Dan. And I don't say that lightly. College sports is in a bad spot right now, and it's going to have to make a really decision to go down one of two paths, neither which are very good. One is to push forward and try to make the best of a bad situation and take the risks that come with that. The risks being, you know, the backlash or potential fallout of really putting, you know, unpaid student athletes out there to try to play a season when there's going to be a lot of criticism and Lord knows what kind of lawsuits could come from that if something goes wrong. That's not a great idea, a great plan. But you know what another not great plan is to say, hey, we're going to punt and not do a college football season and then see the fallout financially that comes from that. We're already starting to see it. We've seen the Ivy League say it's not going to have fall sports and hopefully push things back. And that they have kind of been, it seems like, the litmus test for the rest of the sports world. That people have seemed to kind of follow their lead. We'll see if that happens again. The thing that I thought was really stunning this week was Stanford cuts 11 sports. And this is a Stanford athletic department that, you know, for folks who are familiar with college sports, there's that thing called the Director's Cup. And it is an award that's given out to basically the most well-rounded athletic department in the country. And Stanford routinely wins this thing or comes close to winning it because they have so many sports that are really good. I mean, they have champions across all their different sports. And they're saying, look, with the restrictions we have faced financially and the kind of dark cloud hanging over the college football season, we have to make some changes in how many sports we can support. Now, this is a school with an endowment that's close to $30 billion, but it's not going to tap into it for college sports. But that does show the financial pressure that's on these programs to try to have a college football season. And here's what's going to happen first. And as they continue to try to scale back and adjust and find some way to salvage some sort of college football season, we're already seeing how it's going to look. The Big Ten was the first. There will be other Power Five conferences that follow. It's going to be a circling of the wagons around the Power Five programs to protect their own. And that means that Big Ten teams are only going to play Big Ten teams, and SEC teams are probably only going to play SEC teams. And the reason you do that is because the conference can then be in control. If there's two teams that have to shut down, the two teams that are without a game can play each other. All those things could be worked out much quicker if all those teams are from the same conference. There's just more control. There's more autonomy from the conferences to make decisions that affect their conference schools. The people that suffer, the programs that suffer, are going to be the non-Power Five. I mean, there are programs, colleges that benefit greatly, that keep their programs afloat by getting those games. You know, when Missouri State plays Mizzou, it gets a big check. And that check goes to supporting all the different programs, especially programs that don't make money. So I'm afraid we're going to see a fallout from this. Even if the best case scenario of a season happens, there's going to be cuts. There's going to be losses of jobs. There's going to be sports that are eliminated. And I wish, you know, looking back, there would have been a more of a call to say, hey, there needs to be more savings, more plans in place if there has to be a college football season that's skipped. But this was not a world that thought about that being a possibility. This is a world that thinks about how can we spend all this money we have so we don't have to end up, you know, being hearing calls to pay student athletes. This is a world that pays coaches millions upon millions of dollars to not coach when they buy them out from football contracts and upgrade their stadiums every other year because the school across the conference does. The spending was pretty wild, and now there's a big reality check.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.
Let's also go to, and again, want to jump around here, the NBA. They're starting to report to the bubble in Orlando. We've seen the MLS come back, and obviously that has had some bumps in the road, big bumps. What do you think about what you've seen with MLS, and they're in Orlando too, and now the NBA coming back? What do you think?
Well, I think we're all on bubble watch.
Yeah. I just don't want to see these bubbles burst.
Right. I'm kind of encouraged by some of the feedback we've been able to gather. Like, the no one pays attention to it, but the basketball tournament, which, like, the TBT, which is that kind of, they do it every year. It's the, you know, 5-on-5, pick, basically a pickup league, more or less, that plays for a grand prize of $1 million. Javon Best, the former Sloop, Milliken was just involved in it. His team got bounced. But their bubble seems to be working. If they're not playing in masks, they're not doing anything once they're on the court. It's a regular basketball game. But they're in a lockdown hotel, very strict rules, lots of tests. And if a team gets a case, the team is out. And it's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It seems really, really, really maybe over the top, but it seems to also be working. The tournament continues. They had a team get tossed out for no fault of its own, but that's how they decided to enforce it. And that's, I think, maybe a sign of how that could work. We will hear a lot about the NBA bubble. I mean, players are going to be making sure we hear about it. If they're not happy with the accommodations, with the food, we'll hear about it. So that's going to be a fascinating and more scrutinized bubble. And I think all of these ones are going to inform what we see with hockey. Baseball is not really in that setting. There are a lot more freedom there for the players, so it's hard to compare. But, you know, the other one to watch is MLS, and they've had two teams now. They're just getting this MLS's back tournament started. They've had two teams now already be removed from the equation. Part of that, I think, is going to deal with, you know, how sure you can be the virus is not involved when you create the bubble. One of the most frustrating things about this virus is that it's really hard to determine when you're going to show that you have it. You know, the incubation period can be something along the lines of 2 to 14 days. So you better, you know, be overly cautious and make sure you have the players and the coaches and the people who are going to be inside the bubble checked out for that length of time in some sort of a holding pattern before you put them in, because if you do put them in, then you're going to have to risk, you know, that spreading before there's a positive test. So it's complicated. It is going to be very expensive, and, you know, a few missed people, a few mistakes can have big repercussions. I mean, there's also this discussion now. It's not exactly like a team that gets it or a team that has to be shut down has been reckless. Now, there could be examples of that, but because we don't know how you can get this, because you've seen people, heard stories from people who've done all the right things and still come down with it, this assumption that a team that's involved that has a problem with the virus was out doing something it shouldn't have been done, we can't make those assumptions. So it's going to be really important for people to follow the rules, but that's also not a guarantee it's going to work. So the bubbles, I think as we get closer to the start of NHL workouts, that's going to be something to watch, because I think you better believe the NHL is watching that and seeing what works, what doesn't, as they try to figure out their own two systems in Canada.
And I'm going to wrap it up with this. If you're a hockey fan, obviously, if you're just a sports fan, take everything else out of it, what's going on in our world. But if you're a hockey fan, you have to be excited over the fact, if you've been watching baseball, I think if you're watching what's going on with the NFL, it's going to get worse with the CBA, if you want to call it that, with how they try to get back to play with the cancellation of games. You're going to hear about money. We heard a lot about money with baseball. You're hearing a lot about money with college sports because it's about money. Quietly, through a pandemic, they get a four-year extension. I applaud them for doing that, and he didn't hear about it. And all of a sudden, they just kind of came out and said, oh, by the way, we got a four-year extension. And it's done by Donald Fehr, and it's done by Gary Bettman, and we are going to come out of this one way or another, and they hope to get their bubble done, and they hope to award a Stanley Cup, and we hope to have the resumption of this season and beyond. But you know what? By God, they got a four-year extension. I mean, my goodness, Ben. That is huge, and I think it's kind of flown under the radar through all this of unemployment and all the different things that are happening, that they found a way to continue their sport going. One way or another, they got labor peace, and that's to be commended. I don't know if you feel that way, but I do, being a guy that is intimately involved in baseball and saw the ups and downs of dealing with that as a baseball fan, too. That is huge to see a CBA through a pandemic. Good on hockey. That's how I feel.
I agree and echo that compliment. I mean, this is a league that has had drastic backlash due to previous labor disagreements. One that has had, multiple work stoppages, and for them to navigate through this and kind of very quietly and behind the scenes figure out a way to extend things without. You know, all of the bad press and fan angst. I think it's really, really impressive. I mean, the NHL has had three lockouts in the last 3 decades, and it figures out a collective bargaining agreement during a time when, baseball is falling all over itself, making fools out of itself, when they don't even, have to have a new CBA. Baseball doesn't until after the 2021 season. So really impressive. Pretty cool to see. And you're right, it probably hasn't gotten as much attention as it deserves because it was so smooth and under the radar. So, look, I tell you what, a lot of these leagues have made themselves look silly during this time. I've said it from the beginning. We'll see how the bubble goes. There could be problems there. But I think the NHL has shown that it's a progressing league. It's shown that it's got some good leadership. And it's shown that it is, certainly when it comes to these types of relations, has a better negotiating grounds between players and owners than what we're currently seeing in baseball. They like doing business better together. It certainly seems like that.
Absolutely. Hey, Ben, awesome stuff. Sports is coming back. They're trying. So makes these visits on a Friday more about what we concentrate on the field, and hopefully we're talking more about the roster construction of the Cardinals next Friday as we edge closer to what we hope will be opening day of 2020. As always, great to visit with you. Stay safe, and hopefully we see you at the ballpark very soon. Appreciate it, and I'll catch up with you next Friday.
Sounds good, brother. Looking forward to it.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.